You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
So, what are you guys going to do? Are you going to continue to be a bunch of soft, underperforming, tattooed millionaires?
They said all along, perfection is not possible. We just want to get the big decisions right.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
Green room getting hot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
The right answer was a goal in Times Square so we could do butts up. But that was an easy one.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental on MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe, as always, here in the green room with me, David Goss, fresh off a trip to Toronto for a little free space, some disappointment in his spare time. Bobby Warshaw as well. Bobby, we always enjoy our Thursdays with you. Coming up here on this show, Better Call Paul. David Dimmitt, our resident jingle expert, I think. Is that accurate?
Well, that's because Alexi Lalas got his own podcast, and now
right,
he's,
so now he's
jingles
sending
for
us stuff, yeah. Which is kind of, you know, that's a little disappointing as well. That's free space.
Everyone's big
style.
Time now. Everyone's big time.
Yeah, but Dimmitt's got a good intro for Paul Tenorio, national writer here at MLSsoccer.com. At Paul Tenorio on Twitter, we're going to talk international market spots. Look, it's got a little crazy with the price on those. Fernando Torres, he had some news last time. He couldn't share. Well, he'll share it this time. Orlando City are winning again, and Lee Wynn. The situation gets weirder and weeder. We're also going to talk Bobby Wood. Steve Goff says he's exploring the possibility of moving to MLS, but he doesn't want to take a pay cut, and it will require a seven-figure transfer fee. So I have a feeling that might be a quick exploration. So we'll see about that one. Of course, we have the mailbag and all your CCL fever reactions, which are depressing,
which were all very similar,
soul crushing, and yes, basically
there was
the same.
Two trains of thought from all fans. One was free space's disappointment. The other was Josie and Michael choke again.
Yeah, those are the two kind of parallel lines that are running through this one. We'll get to all that. We'll get to MLS Week 8. We'll do that. You can hit us up as always 401-206-0MLS extra time at MLSsoccer.com. MLSsoccer.com/mailbag. Let's just address the elephant in the room, guys. I went back and listened to Monday's show. Just the first segment, just the Toronto FC. It wasn't celebratory, but we were buoyant. We believed, man. We really thought this was the year it was going to change. We were talking legacies and how much better a team they were and favorites. And yes, we had our MLS, CCL fever, hats on, so we expected some sort of gut punch. But I don't think we expected quite this much force. 2-1, Chivas, Guadalajara. Goal scored in the first minute to just immediately drive home the point that this was going to be more of the same, more of what we're accustomed to, more free space for MLS and CCL. And then Toronto FC turned it on, and they get a goal, and Osorio scores, and you're thinking, okay, 2-1, 3-1, what's it going to be? Toronto FC is still going to get the results, still going to go to Guadalajara, still going to go to Akron with the favorites tag, still going to be in the driver's seat. But no, 70-something minutes in, free kick from Alan Pulido over Alex Bono's head. It was a cross shot in that it was a cross, and it was fortunately turned into a shot. Goes over his head. He took responsibility, said, that's on me. It was, I think I'm safe calling it a howler. Also in this game, Josie Altidore is yakking on the field. He's puking multiple times. Apparently, according to Craig Vanney, Josie and some others came back from Mexico with stomach issues. Clearly, that is, I don't know. You could maybe let us know here, Dave. That seems like a symptom of CCL fever, if I had to guess.
Yeah, I felt nauseous over the last 48 hours as well. So I can imagine.
I mean, look, I feel like it feels like, putting on an old pair of jeans that fits just right.
Yep.
You know what I mean? We're like, we had that new outfit. We're like, MLS is the favorites. We're going to do this thing. And then now we're just back in the same old, like,
how could an MLS team ever win in Mexico?
That's a really bad comparison. I was going to say.
Yeah, that's the way the show works. Have you not, bad analogies are my forte.
It's because Weeby's a dog bird. That's why he's out here being a dog.
It's a bird dog.
A bird dog. Yeah. I forgot your fake analogy.
That's not a fake analogy. Also, a dog bird?
How ridiculous of me.
What are you talking about? Bobby, what happened?
I want you guys to go first. You guys.
Because Bobby's going to say Chivas played well. Bobby's going to roll in here with the hottest take possible and say that the team that got destroyed and scored two lucky goals played well. So shoot, Bobby.
Why am I going? You guys don't want to go first?
He just gave his thoughts. I think he just summed it up for you. So I think it's on you now.
It's really easy to build this narrative that Toronto blew it, and I just did not see it that way. I saw a Toronto team that played fine, that if it scored their chances, comes out of this on top. And this is what happens in good soccer games between two good teams. And perhaps this is our fault because we made it sound like Chivas is not that good a team. It's still Chivas Guadalajara. It's still a team that made it to the Champions League final. Yes, they're struggling in Liga MX right now, but they're still very good. This was not Trinidad and Tobago, who is essentially a semi-pro team.
Yeah, look, I didn't think that those comparisons, and Doyle's made a couple of them, I didn't think that those were accurate. That's apples and oranges, and the quality of opponent, the experience, the stakes, because for Trinidad and Tobago, really the stakes were just spoiling the party. So I'm with you on that one. But let's not pretend like Chivas are at the same level of a Tigres or América, which is why I think we and others and perhaps Toronto FC were a little overconfident.
You could also be overconfident if you watched Tuesday night's game and noticed that Chivas was awful. Chivas wasn't good. Expected goals, 2.16 for TFC, 0.93 for Chivas. 2 minutes in, you get a goal off a set piece where TFC marks horribly. So you get lucky. Great.
What did they mark wrong? Who was unmarked on this play?
Well, Aro's a step off Pizarro. So he lets Pizarro cut near post, and he's a step away from him. And then at the near post, no TFC.
He's not ball side. Yeah.
This is so easy to do after the fact. The ball got through, and yes,
Chivas
scored.
Okay, so that's fine. But that's fine, Bobby. Bobby, that's how they got their goal.
But nobody
messed by them.
Nobody did anything really wrong on that play.
So what did Chivas do great on that play?
Chivas did a regular soccer play there, and they just got to the ball before
Toronto.
So they're
not a great team because of that play.
Nobody's claiming Chivas is a great team.
They then proceeded to play the rest of that game. They sat back defensively. They were good. They weren't amazing. They got cut open clearly a couple times because expected goals 2.16.
They do what they do well extremely well.
Tell the people at home what that is.
So the big thing for them is that they stay compact from their defensive line to their midfield line. They keep a small space in between, and they actually match up fairly more, meaning they man mark fairly more in the middle of the field, denying your key players space. So instead of giving you space and making sure they don't go through you, they get a little tighter and making sure you don't even get the ball in those dangerous spots anyway.
The problem with that for me is, why did Josie dominate the ball in the first 45 minutes and fail to touch the ball in the second half? You can say they adjusted. You can also say Josie Altidore kept throwing up. And if Josie Altidore is healthy, this game at a minimum is 2-2. He created the goal. He was the one that played Delgado through. Why? Because he put a center back on his back, which when he's in form, he's capable of doing at will. And he played a great first pass, which when he's in form, he's capable of doing. Delgado's through. He played to the far post.
So,
Sario,
what's your
finishes.
Point here? What point
My
are you
point
making?
Is that TFC lost this game and Chivas did not win this game. And I've been really tired of hearing that, because then Pulido puts a cross in that goes in.
I haven't heard anybody say that Chivas fully won this game. I also don't want to.
Alejandro Moreno went on ESPN FC and said TFC didn't belong to be there. I've heard a lot of other people say.
Let's not put what Alejandro Moreno says on a pedestal here.
I've heard a lot of other people say Chivas played great. I mean, Simon was telling me it was a gorgeous shot from Pulido and Chivas played fantastic.
That's the most Simon. I'm like, yeah.
He said he hit it too high. For it to be a cross, which made me feel like I was in major
league. AKA, he hit a terrible, terrible cross, and he got lucky that it was windy and cold, and it caught at the right moment, and Alex Bono's out here like on his tippy toes, coming out to a ball that's never going to get there and misjudges it. I mean, that's an outfielder who takes the first two steps in when the rule is you always take a step back. You always do. And maybe he does it because Toronto FC weren't great on set pieces. I don't think Chivas played well in the traditional sense of, like, was that good soccer? I think they played well in the sense that all that matters in this game is the result. And MLS teams over and over and over in this competition have proved that they either don't understand that or they're not capable of getting the job done when it matters most. And the reason why this is such a gut punch is because Toronto FC were supposed to be different. They were supposed to be the team that has felt this pain in 2016 to the Seattle Sounders when a team came into their house, didn't really play, and still walked away with the result that matters. They were supposed to be the team that figured it out in 2017, that got the extra piece in Victor Vasquez, which, dang it, we didn't get to see in this game, of course, because he's still smarting from that back issue, but figured out how to win and figured out how to take every game seriously for all 90 minutes, whether it was a minnow, whether it was a team they were better than, no matter who it was. This was a team that then did it against Tigres, that then did it in America, that, you know, should understand that it didn't matter that they did it against those teams, that those were just steps along the way to the ultimate destination.
They just
didn't get it done. Like, it's a result-based thing. These finals, all that matters is who wins. And I thought Chivas did what they needed to do. There was fortune involved in that. I agree with Dave. The defending on that throw-in, And I know that you, like, we had a back and forth about this where I'm like, that can't happen. You say, well, why? On the field for what reasons?
Don't you always say, if you're behind a man, you're on the defensive team, right? You step up to mark a guy for a throw-in. Don't you always yell at whoever's closest and say, you have thrower?
Not always. A lot of the time.
So when you're in your final third, do you? Because that's what happened is it's a give and go to the thrower, and then the ball gets played in.
Listen, I'm not going to say that Toronto didn't mess up on that, but we're framing this as if it was this catastrophic mistake where they choked and they blew it. It was a soccer mistake that happens.
Yes.
Every single time. Toronto's good because they don't make those. It just makes me mad when we build this narrative of how did Toronto blow this? How did they mess up so badly? It was simple soccer things, and Chivas is a good team who punished them. But we also have to remember,
good enough team.
If there were a couple shots and a penalty kick call that go an inch or a different another way,
yeah, look, I mean,
it's the same game where Toronto wins 3-4-1. We're playing Toronto.
Well, that's why I'm saying it's on Toronto on what happened.
Yeah.
And what really stood out to me was when Chivas were ahead. So they were ahead for 20 minutes twice in this game. They didn't scare me on the counter. They got out, they got opportunities, and they ripped shots from 20 yards out, completely past goal. So that part to me says TFC couldn't create goals, but Chivas can't either. And so you go into the second leg and you say, one, you can see the first goal, it really doesn't matter.
But also, you said Chivas can't create either, which was the whole point of this
first
leg.
Which is why it hurts.
Which do not allow them to get BS goals that they don't really deserve. Like, that was the first minute, that's their most dangerous attacking moment. It really is.
Yeah.
Like, and then you have a free kick that absolutely
cannot
go in.
They had one good look late in the first half where they put someone like on the top of the six for a header that went just wide. But yeah, besides that, I agree with you.
Right.
And TFC gave them goals, which we talked about with Seattle. Like, you needed to get up a lot at home to go on the road. Now you're behind.
And let's talk about the game as a whole. We can acknowledge, even though I don't think Toronto played badly, they didn't play as well as they usually do. They just looked a little slow, they looked a touch lethargic. And I actually think there's a very specific reason for that. Michael Bradley was very hesitant all game because he was on a yellow.
Yeah.
If he had missed time to tackle, if he'd gone into a tackle and something goes wrong, he gets a second yellow for the tournament and he's out for the final.
Yeah.
So Michael just looked a step slow. And Michael is the emotional, the intelligence leader on that team, but also to have a center midfielder who was reactive and a step slow in closing out pockets and winning balls back and recoveries, I can understand how that makes everyone else a step slow.
And also,
as I watched that, I just kept thinking about Confed Cup and the final he missed and the obvious feelings that go along with that and, like, the humanity that's involved in this game and the stakes for Michael Bradley.
And
like,
he doesn't want to miss another final.
This is a legacy game for him. And, like, we talk about Chozy out there all the time. Like, oh, man, it's a big game. Is he going to be hurt? Is he going to pull up lame? And unfortunately for Chozy, that's kind of entered into his legacy because of the past, because of what's happened. And I have to imagine that Michael's thinking that same thing.
So the other thing was that you noticed immediately when the game started was how long the grass was on the field and the ball really running slow. And so now you're playing a team that's going to sit back in numbers and you want to try and break them down through quick passing. And I think that hurt them as well. In this scenario.
And honestly, the surface looked a lot better than I expected to, given that it was covered in snow days before and it's been just a cow patch previously in this tournament. Look, BMO Fields, grounds crew can tell you why that might be, whether it's the conditions or the
But
type
like
of grass.
I've been at, I don't know, 70 MLS games, 100 MLS games. I've been down on the field at BMO Field and I came in, I was sitting two rows up off the field and I looked out and just the length of the grass on the ball, you were like, that's not how it normally looks.
And maybe they felt like they couldn't run the, you know.
Yeah, I'm not saying why.
You can't run the equipment.
I'm not saying
over.
Why.
I know.
I'm not saying.
But it affected the game.
And I think it was a negative for TFC, and I think it really hurt them.
Did Sebastian Jovinko waste his penalty kick call in the America series? Because that's a penalty. People are tweeting at me saying that's not a penalty in the second half. But, like, defender doesn't get the ball, and he basically just runs over the back of Jovinko's legs. Like, I don't know what you want him to do in that scenario.
What does waste your penalty?
The one against America was also a penalty, though.
I agree. I completely agree with that. But, like, this is CONCACAF.
So the answer is no.
Weird stuff happens.
The answer to your question is no.
Yeah.
I don't know. Why didn't he get the call?
Because it was a bad call.
Yeah. It was a bad – same reason what? Salcedo slid down, pinned the ball against the ground with his arm.
Oh.
And there was no handball call there. There was some bad calls in this one. I don't think it was –
I don't think it was
I don't
egregious.
Think it was the reason for the game.
No,
yeah.
I agree. But a 2-2 is much different than a 2-1.
I think one of the other things besides Vasquez being out is I think Ashton Morgan played really well against America, but Justin Morrow gives you something else offensively. And I know Ashton Morgan got forward and got that goal, but in general, Morrow is an option in the box more often. and you see how Osorio scores his goal. But otherwise, Osorio wants to float and get involved in the play. And you didn't have an extra option in the box to cross to or at least stretch the defense. And Bobby mentions being able to man mark. If you bring an extra fullback in, now you have your Chivas fullback and your Chivas midfield trying to figure out who's marking him. I didn't see that happening enough. And I saw Jonathan Osorio talking to Ashton Morgan a lot in this game. Jonathan Osorio was pissed. Like probably from the goal, but we didn't see him before the goal. Yelling at ball boys for balls, like, walked off the field at the end, went to applaud the crowd, and Akeche was trying to talk to him and just blew right by him and was like, quick applause to the fans, and was like, out the door. He was not pleased at all with what occurred, and I don't know if it was just the frustration of giving up the early goal or whatever.
The result itself.
Yeah, but I think that was a big loss for this game, the way this game played out, because you talk about TFC being favorites. Yes, Ashton Morgan can do a job for you defensively and can get forward every once in a while, but Justin Morrow changes the game offensively for your team.
Chris Mavinga starts this game. He leaves at halftime.
Which was another one, by the way.
Cramps is what Greg Vanney said, not an injury issue.
And they used Chivas used their right side as an outlet in the first half, and he wasn't able to close on those balls early enough as we're used to seeing him. And so that gave Chivas time to reset their lines and get out and whatnot. Oh, man, this game pissed me
off.
Yeah,
so this is the text, one of the texts, many texts. I'll read this one now. Worst ETR curse ever, Monday's show and the Toronto result. I don't think that, you know, ETR curse is the blame for this one, certainly. What was it like at the stadium?
It was.
Like, what was the feeling pregame?
It was MLS Cup level.
And then postgame.
Yeah, so it was MLS Cup level pregame and into the game. It was
What's that mean?
Full, like, just it like, was packed to the nines. People were excited. People were locked in. Everyone was there for a reason. And you could feel that. Like, it's palpable. I mean, 2016 MLS Cup, those first 10 or so minutes was, like, one of the coolest environments I've ever experienced. Last year, I think, was a little different.
Is it coolest or coldest?
Both.
Right.
This one wasn't as cold. The snow was, like, picturesque. It felt like it was, like, coming off a movie set. Like, it was, like, big, heavy flakes floating across the field but not sticking. And I think the crowd reacted to the second-minute goal really quickly because, like, they started to generate chances. And when Osorio scored, the place exploded.
Yeah.
And everyone went nuts. After the second goal, so in the 70th, 75th minute, people really could feel the nerves.
Yeah.
But the supporter section stayed at the end to applaud them off because they've got a second game, right? You don't want to, like, disappear. And then everyone disappeared.
Yeah.
And we went out to some bars around afterwards. And I don't think as many people were there as would be if they had won.
If they won, yeah.
So people were out the door quick. But the vibe in the stadium was like, this is a final. This means a lot. And everyone, you know, is ready for this. And I think what Bobby said about Michael Bradley, it was very true. And I also wonder how much of that was being favorites, if that did get into their head at all. Of like Tigres and America was like, we're going to attack them. We have to prove what we're capable of. And this one was maybe from TFC, they came out not as aggressive. And I don't know if that changed with the second minute goal or not, but you didn't feel this team's here to attack and put Chivas to the sword in the beginning.
So I wrote before the Trinidad and Tobago game about the idea of how a complacency creeps into you, and once it's in there, it's a really tough seed to get out. But I just don't see Toronto being that way.
Yeah.
Michael Bradley and Josie have already blown a game like this. It just feels like a team that has their stuff together on the mental end, so I actually would not say that played a role in this game.
So much at stake here for the club, for the players, for the coaches, for Major League Soccer, across the board. Legacies, like, kind of riding on leg two here. Wednesday at Estadio Akron, 9:30 p.m. Eastern, Univision Deportes, Go 90, streaming here in the U.S., a 2-1 deficit. Those two road goals are killer. So Toronto FC, if they get the 2-1, they mirror, and then you're going to, you know, potentially PKs.
Well,
otherwise,
not potentially.
Right.
You'd go to PKs.
Yeah. Otherwise, you're looking at, you have to get a multi-goal win.
You need to, yeah.
You have
you
to
need
get
to score three goals minimum.
Or 2-0,
yeah.
2-0, and I think that's a very plausible result. But you have to do better than what Chivas did, yeah. Basically.
Yeah, it's tough. I believe that TFC is going to win down in Guadalajara. I don't know that the math's going to work for them. I think they're going to go down there, and I think they're going to go for it, and you're going to see how much better they are than Chivas. But they just gave up two goals that Chivas didn't deserve to score. And I don't know that they won't do that again for 90 minutes. So I can see a scenario where they they win 2-1. I can also see scenarios where they win 3-2 or they tie 2-2 in the last minute. Whatever it is, I believe in the quality of TFC to go down there and get a result. But the issue with it, if they had tied 2-2, by the way, I would be fine right now.
Because all, go it, down takes there and is, all win. It takes is a win, yeah.
You are a better team. I've never felt as sure about this, that you are a better team than this. And that environment, I don't know, is as intimidating as Volcan or
Azteca. And by the way, Colorado Rapids was an ice rink. So, like, if you go down and score an early goal and put the pressure on Guadalajara and those fans start to think, God, more of the same, we've won one game in our last 16 league games here.
Yeah.
How insane is that, by the way? That Chivas over the Apertura and Clausura have won one game of 16 at home. Like, it's that is mind-boggling to me. And in this tournament, they are 3-0, 9 goals scored, none allowed at home.
But how many chances did they create against Red Bulls? How many times
right,
did we talk about
it's that? Cibao, right, it's Cibao 5-0.
Yeah.
It's Seattle 3-0 where they piled it on late and it just kind of got out of hand. And then it's, you know, it's 1-0 in a game I can't even remember now.
In the Red Bulls game.
But this is where Toronto FC find themselves. They have to do something no team has ever done before in Major League Soccer to win a tournament no team has ever won before in Major League Soccer. Of two-legged series against Liga MX in this competition, knockout round series, that ended in Mexico. Before this year, MLS was 0-21. Toronto FC are the only team to have ever gotten through when the second leg is in Mexico, and they did so by drawing at Azteca and losing at El Volcan.
They led going into both of those second legs.
Correct. They had to do that. Now, the other side of this is that now there's only one team that's ever even won in Mexico in the knockout rounds, and that happened this year, and that's the Red Bulls at Tijuana. Outside of that, it's like 340-something-9.
Although, in fairness, TFC should have won at Club America. But
yeah, for sure, but they
but
didn't.
Continue. They did
but
not.
They didn't.
They
like,
did not,
yeah,
yes.
They didn't. So, I mean, this there's just the odds are not good, and the other thing is Jared Pereira is back. Rodolfo Cota is back. Edwin Hernandez is back at left back, and that's where they exploited for the goal in this game. So Chivas just got stronger. Chivas has a lead. Chivas gets to go home. Chivas has literally nothing to play for in Liga MX.
Yeah.
This is everything. This is Chivas' season. This is Mateus Almeida's job, perhaps. This is the future of a lot of players on the squad. Like, you're going to have to tear this out of their clutches, and it's going to be a first, if it's done.
Yeah. Everything about it is going to be that. And I mean, we talked about it coming into this, but this is a chance for Bradley and Josie with that legacy stuff after losing a World Cup. This is as big as you can make it now, right? You got to go down to Mexico and make history in two different ways. And you have to do it against the biggest name in Mexican soccer. There is quality in that Chivas front line, in Pulido, in Pizarro. So on the break, they're going to get looks. If they finish one of those chances, it's a real
you
gut
might,
punch.
Yeah.
So you need them to play like they did in the first leg, which was not very good. I understand Pulido scored, but it was not very good. I understand Pizarro scored. I didn't think either of them was great. You also are in a place where you're hoping that Justin Morrows gets back because he played in leg one. If he can start and go 90 for you in leg, or at least go 65 in leg two, that's a pretty big pickup. And I think losing Mavinga and gaining Morrow is an upgrade for them in this series.
If Mavinga's out, because he could be Zavaleta, but he was cramping.
Right.
Who knows?
But I thought Zavaleta played fine, and I think in the three, if you have Drew Moore, you can move the other pieces around. I think Vanderbilt's been fine as well.
The bigger absence is definitely Victor Vazquez.
Well, that's the question. Right.
Well, one thing we said before the game,
I mean, that's the heartbreaking thing here, right?
Well, where is he? Because last I heard, he was training. He just was ready to take a fitness test right before the game, so in theory, he should be ready to go, but I just want to point out, if we go back to 2016, the Seattle Sounders sat in deep. Toronto couldn't figure them out. After the game, Josie Altidore says, we need one more creative player. We need one more guy to help us problem solve. Toronto goes out and get Victor Vazquez. We saw what happened in 2017. Vazquez, what I'm trying to say is that Vazquez is the guy for this exact type of game. The way this team is built needs Victor Vazquez. Maybe not at all times, but for this specific scenario, playing against a team that plays this style.
And is up 2-1.
And this is what we said on Monday was, for Monday, it's not the game you need Vazquez. It's for this one where you need to break down a team that's sitting back.
The assumption also being on Monday that, you know, and I think we were all guilty of it.
Thinking they wouldn't go down.
Toronto FC would get a result.
Right. Bobby, Take me through this instance where you're Victor Vasquez or you're this coaching staff. You have an injury that clearly you don't fully understand, where you can play, but you don't know if it's going to have a negative effect for the rest of the year or have a negative effect from there on.
And you don't know if maybe in the 45th or the 40th or the 30th or the right. 5th or whatever it is with the nerves in the back, like
yeah.
It's just like one wrong move, one little tweak, one something, it could flare up. You could be off the field.
You guys are asking me one of the bigger questions in the history of sports.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is something that every team and every sport faces all the time. I don't have a good answer, and a lot of times you have to leave it to the player. It's his career. If he says that this is our one moment to be legends, then I want to play. But he also has a few more years and a few more contracts left. So if I'm Victor Vasquez, as much as this game means, I wouldn't play.
Vasquez, he re-signed, yeah?
Yep.
Yeah, so he re-signed with Toronto. So he's
two or 3 years?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he's 31, 32.
So he probably has another contract after that,
maybe,
plus bonuses
yeah.
every year.
Right. If you're the TFC coaching staff.
Plus the fact that he just wants to be like, lay down in his bed at night and sleep because,
right.
God, back issues.
Yeah.
If you're the TFC coaching staff, the conversation is this is it. If something happens and we lose you for the season, this is the chance you take in this game, in this scenario. This is MLS Cup of 2018 for you. This is more important in my mind. And I think this coaching staff
understands
that.
Because, by the way,
that.
If it took 6 months for him to recover,
then he'd still make it back, yeah.
And even if still he, win, you can still win MLS Cup 2018.
But even if he doesn't,
right.
to win CCL, after the run you had in 2017, to me is more important than winning 2018 MLS Cup. Not saying you're making that decision,
yeah.
and you're not trying to.
And that's
trade
the worst. That's
the
worst case scenario.
Yeah, and so this is where it's time to go. I think it's going to be fun because TFC is going to come out. They have to and go flying for it.
Yeah.
See, I don't think they are. I don't expect them to do that at all. They're going to play a very regular game and just say, "Hey, we're better than Chivas and we can beat them."
But no, is it a regular game? Because on the road in Mexico. What is a regular game?
Well, the same game that they've played the other 65 over the last 2 years. They're not going to fly forward. They're not going to take unnecessary chances. They're going to play the same soccer game. Because we thought this,
but
going into El Volcan, we thought that they were going to play defensive. We thought going to Club America that they were going to adjust things. And they never have. There hasn't been a single game over the last 2 years when they did anything different.
But they were not on the way the game played out in Club America. They were not on the front foot. They got the goal because, you know, Toshan Ricketts and his gorgeous pass.
You're right. They were on the front foot, but just the general way they played, their lines of pressure,
right.
their mentality was all the same. And I don't know. I would. Over and over, we thought that Toronto was going to do something different, that they were going to slip up over the last 2 years, and they never really have.
Well, they did something different at MLS Cup.
Yeah, I mean,
the formation.
But they changed the formation with the same mentality.
Yeah, I agree with you.
The same general ethos of their team.
But I think this is a team that can come out at times, and their wingbacks get forward, and it feels like they're throwing wave after wave at teams. In MLS, in the playoffs.
But the last thing that you can't afford, to go to Bobby's point, is another early goal for Chivas.
Although it really doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
If you give up an early goal, you need two goals. You need two goals either way.
Yeah.
That first goal is this weird one scenario in a two-legged affair where you can have one situation where it literally doesn't matter. Now, it's a gut punch. Mentally, it hurts. But in terms of the scoreboard, it really doesn't matter to give up that first goal.
Sure, but I do think that that goal then puts Chivas into a different mindset from the way they play.
Probably.
They're going to drop back more in that case.
They're going to be back anyway.
Yes, but I don't know.
If TFC scores one and even goes into the locker room up 1-0, where you're basically in a scenario where next goal wins, I think Chivas is going to get tight, and I don't know that the fans are going to be behind them 100%. So
2-0 is obviously the scoreline you're looking
right.
for here.
Well, I'm just saying if TFC goes up 1-0 and they're playing well, then they have to be confident at that moment that the series is in their hands and they're in a place to win it.
The thing that really concerns me about all of this was there is a weird 12 minutes at the end of that last game where it's the only time that Toronto has lost the plot and looked flustered at all.
Chivas game.
Yeah, where they started throwing numbers forward, and all of a sudden it was a race back and forth. Toronto would attack, they would lose their shape, Chivas would come attack, and it looked like Chivas was more likely to score.
Yeah, I would. But
that's my big concern that happened.
But here's my thing, and this is what I'm saying about Chivas. They didn't. And that's where, in my mind, they don't have quality. Like, if you're talking about Alan Pulido, and you think about him, as a young up-and-coming Mexican international who's going to Europe, he's not that player anymore. And he's not an efficient finisher. He missed a wide-open chance against Seattle that would have put the series away in the first game. In Seattle, you look at Pizarro, and he's not the same player that he was when he was on Pachuca. And I don't know if that's the way the team set up. I don't know if that's his mentality, what he needs to play in to be at his best. These guys aren't the same. These are the two guys that are going to kill you on the break. And so if you're TFC, I think you You go for it and you trust that my guys in an unorganized game can beat these guys. Not saying you want that, but in those moments, you believe, I think, in Drew Moore, in Morrow, in Vanderveel, that they can defend 2v2 at times.
Well, Toronto FC will have to do what no MLS team has done before in order to win the tournament. No MLS team has won before. We're back where we started. CCL Fever, baby.
It feels comfortable,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, it does, man. These jeans are broken.
Weavy's got his mom's jeans, on.
I wish I had some nice mom jeans. These aren't as comfortable as my CCL jeans. 9:30 p.m. Eastern, Wednesday. UDN, go 90. Chivas hosting Toronto FC. This is the big one. This decides it all. Thank God for two legs in this competition, because otherwise we'd be just wallowing in our own disappointment. We're going to go to break. On the other side, Better Call Paul. We've got a lot to talk about. Lee Wynn, Bobby Wood. We'll be right back.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
You better call Paul. Paul! You better call Paul. Go ahead and call Paul. You better call Paul. Whoa, hot take.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. Yes, that is intro music for Better Call Paul. Paul Tenorio, at Paul Tenorio on Twitter. He's a national writer for MLSsoccer.com, and we, of course, talk to Paul every single Thursday about Major League Soccer. Paul, in your expert opinion, is your jingle better than Sam Stachel's jingle? Shout out to David Dimmitt for both of them.
Of course it is. Of course it is. I don't think there's any question about it. You know, I was dancing to it when it came on. I think it's more danceable, right? I think that's the key to put it over the top.
It's more of a banger.
Yeah,
for sure.
And if, you know, I think in our general ETR power rankings of MLSsoccer.com national writers, Paul Tenorio remains at the top, has been at the top without a jingle. Sam Stachel has some work to do to get over the hump. Let's get right into it, Paul. Lee Wynn, we finally heard from him. You know, he didn't have much to say this week when he talked to the media. Basically said, I have to keep an open mind. Whatever happens, I'm ready to go wherever the soccer journey leads me. On the other side, Brad Friedel had some interesting things. He said he had no issues with Lee, but then he made a little comment about playing committed players, which seemed pointed. And then he said Diego Fagundes is the best number 10 at the club, and we should be talking about him instead. Meanwhile, a $500,000 player, a best 11 quality attacker, rots not even on their bench. What do you make of all this?
Yeah, it's really interesting to me because it feels almost like a cry for help from Brad Friedel in a way. Like, I think he recognizes at this point that, you know, he's not going to be able to fully move on and move this team forward and truly begin the Brad Friedel era and the rebuild and all of that as long as Lee Wynn is sitting and watching games from a box up in Foxborough instead of on the field or even on the bench. And, you know, some of his comments to me kind of read that way a little bit, because if you're saying that he is not the best number 10 on the roster, then there's no reason why he shouldn't be a player that's getting traded. No team wants a $500,000 player sitting on their salary budget when there's a market for a player. Now, there are a lot of times that we see MLS teams make bad signings and they have expensive players on the roster that they can't move and they can't trade no matter how hard they try. That's not the case here. There was a $750,000 offer that was on the table, you know, just about a week ago. So, you know, they have the ability to move him. And Brad Friedel, as much as I respect him for getting up and answering the tough questions for the media, I think he dug himself a little bit of a hole here because he's making the case more for trading Lee Wynn than he is for anything else.
I look at this situation and I see that $750,000 offer, Paul. And I just wonder, based on the way it's all gone, based on the fact that Lee is watching from the stands, based on the fact that he is 31, that they've maybe overplayed their hand just a little bit here. I don't know who's going to give them more than that at this point. Taylor Twellman says his value, and he did a bunch of math there, and he got up to $2.25 million. And that to me is convoluted math. What do you think his value is?
Well, I think what Taylor was trying to say with that math is, you know, it's not just the $750,000 you'd be receiving in a trade that's the value of Lee Wynn. You're taking $500,000 off your books this year and $1 million off your books over the next 2 years as well by trading him to another team. So I think that's what
Taylor Twellman is trying to say. If you trade Lee Wynn for $750,000, that clears or gives you $1.25 million, probably a little less than that because we're assuming that Lee Wynn is bought down with TAM in salary budget space to work with. It gives you more TAM to work with. It gives you more budget space to work with. And it gives you $750,000 of allocation money to work with. And that all needs to be factored in when we're talking about this trade. I think that, you know, when you try to make comparisons to the money that's been moved around the league so far this offseason, you can't look at Justin Merrim or David Akam if you're New England and try to justify those numbers as comparable for Lee Wynn. Those years of difference in age are pretty important years, 28, 29, 30, in a player's career. Lee Wynn is 31 going on 32. That number, that 750,000 number, is not going to go up from here, okay? It's going to go down. And I'm not even sure that they're going to be able to come back to that team and ask for $750,000 if they have a change of heart and decide to trade Lee Wynn tomorrow. They're talking themselves into a worse bargaining position by saying that Lee Wynn is not good enough and not a good fit with their system. Because when you say that, what you're saying is he doesn't have value to our team. And that's the point I'm trying to get across here is, you know, the longer they keep Lee Wynn, the more that value is going to go down. And the more that they keep talking to justify not playing Lee Wynn, the more they're tanking his value. The best solution here is to trade him. And if they wait, by the way, till the summer window, you know, as Taylor was saying, a lot of players get moved in August when teams are trying to get over the hump and trying to get into the playoffs. You know, I don't think that the money is going to be anywhere close. I'm talking like maybe $300,000 worth of value for Lee Wynn at that point. And remember, at that point, he might be a guy who hasn't played a game in about a year.
So what are the odds that he doesn't get moved? Because I keep watching this and I keep thinking maybe Lee Wynn just watches from the stands for a year and then they don't pick up his option and they consider it a message sent and move on.
Yeah, well, there's a couple things here. If they don't pick up his option at the end of the year, they still own his MLS rights. And that's an area where I think we'd get into I'd have to go double check. I guess with his age and his years served, he might be right on the border of free agency with a non-picked up option. But I would assume that the better business and sending a good message is getting value for the players on your team that have value. Can you imagine if they allowed Lee Wynn to sit for an entire season when they could have had $750,000 in allocation for him and then allowed him to leave via free agency? I mean, the lack of responsibility and business structure to go into a decision like that would be incredibly difficult for fans to swallow, and I think rightfully so. I don't know that Lee Wynn is going to be traded, honestly. You know, I don't know if this is at this point being made as a business decision or as a point you're trying to prove. But I mean, let's be honest here. Asking for a trade is not the worst crime in the world. It happens in sports all the time. And to punish a player 1, 2, 3, 4 times for that quote unquote insult to the club or whatever they want to phrase it as or try to paint it as, I think is going a bit far. You know, you find the guy. You sat him out of preseason. You've sat him for 6 or 7 games so far. Either move on and trade him or put him on the field.
You know what I find interesting about this, guys? It's that every part of your organization has a value and has a price. A player has a vice, a price. A training ground has a price. And right now, Brad Friedel is saying that I am putting a value of $750,000 on the culture and the atmosphere I'm building. And yet stinks that Lee Wynn is a casualty of that, but he's deciding that he values the culture and the statement that he's trying to make above $750,000. And to be honest, I can't say that's completely wrong. I applaud a coach doing that, but it's also just interesting to see a tangible value number put on something like that.
But my thing is you can't just look at it in one way like that and say it's placing a number on value, right? Because you're also sending another type of message to players within your team that, you know, hey, if you ever feel like you're underpaid, don't come talking to us because we're not going to give you any money. Don't ask
for
a trade.
Well, the Revs sent that a long time ago.
And not
that's a trademark
that,
of the organization.
You're talking about, okay, you're talking to the media about, well, let's pay attention to what Diego Fagundes is doing in the number 10 spot. While at the same time, you're underhanding and pulling out any chance for Diego Fagundes to get any love for what he's doing at the number 10 spot, because it should be the responsibility of the media to ask about Lee Wynn every single week he doesn't play until there's a solution to this issue. I don't think what this situation reminds me of is when Mike Shanahan came into the Redskins organization when I was at the Washington Post and immediately tried to make a power move by telling Albert Haynesworth, a $100 million player, that he couldn't play until he passed a conditioning test. And it became a two-week saga in preseason that then carried over into the regular season. And eventually he benched him for 4 weeks during the regular season at the end of the year for contract detrimental to the team. And it wasn't until he traded Albert Haynesworth to the Patriots at the end of that year, before the next season started, that he was actually able to build something that mattered within the Redskins organization. And I don't think it's a coincidence that they had much more success in that second season. Sometimes sending a message to one individual undermines the task in trying to build a team. And it really doesn't send a power message as much as it says, you know, my individual power matters more than the potential success of a team.
This is going on for a long time. It's still going to go on. Paul Tenorio and Sam Tedesco have been all over it. You kind of teased when you were last on, Paul, about Fernando Torres. You said you had some news to share, a team perhaps. It seems the Chicago Fire are that team. Then Peter Vermes says, hey, we'd look at him too. What's going on with Torres?
Well, look, I think the Fire are very interested in Torres. They have him on Discovery. They've had him on Discovery for several years from what I've been told. And, you know, it's because he's a favorite of Veljko Paunović. He's the guy who played with him at Atletico Madrid, has a good relationship with him. I think we've seen already this season that the way Veljko Paunović thinks he could play with two strikers and the players he has on this roster in that 3-5-2 formation. Now, whether or not it actually happens, that's a whole other question. I mean, the price range is going to be critically important here. And I think a lot of people are trying to use that Zlatan Ibrahimovic number as leverage in negotiations to say, hey, listen, if Zlatan comes at his age and is only paid $1.5 million, you know, we want to pay you a similar number or, you know, somewhere in that TAM range versus DP range. I'm not sure every player is going to be willing to come for that kind of money. And I'm not sure Fernando Torres is going to be willing to come for less than a DP money. So that'll be the big thing that is a decider here. You know, as far as Sporting Kansas City, I think he actually would be a better fit there in Kansas City. And it's all about the amount of money that you got. And then are you willing to trade for the Discovery rights with the Fire? So there are a lot of angles before Sporting Kansas City can get involved here.
Moving on to another team that's made some big moves. We've talked about Orlando a lot. They're on a 3-game winning streak. They're looking good. A lot of pieces have come back healthy. The one piece we're still waiting on is Uri Rossell. What's going on with him?
Yeah, so speaking to Jason Kreis this week, he said, look, you know, we had Rossell in at training last week. It was really his first full week back. And he said, I would not have felt confident at all playing Rossell for 45 minutes in last week's game. He goes, now my goal is that by the end of this week, he'll be 60 minutes fit. And now we can really look at trying to get him back involved and back on the field. So I would be, I don't think he'll be in the starting lineup for Orlando City this week, but I would not be surprised to see Jason Kreis get him back on the field and try to get, you know, a solid 20 to 30 minutes of game fitness to start to gauge where he is and how soon he can challenge for a starting role. You know, but, I think Christian Aguita gave Jason Kreis a pretty good dilemma in how well he performed when he stepped into defensive midfield. So they have a little bit of wiggle room right now in that position to allow Uri Rossell to work back from that knee injury.
So before we get you out of here, I read your column on International Spots, Paul, and I think it's interesting because these are the little nuances that every single year in this league we see change. The price of assets in one way, and we talk about it with Lee Wynn, but it's changed with International Spots. They've gone up. It used to be 50K you'd see, and it was kind of a throwaway trade, and you're like, oh, whatever, this was marginal. Now you're seeing them approach 200,000. Why is that?
Well, there's just fewer of them available right now in MLS because of the targeted allocation money that's come into the league, the number of players who have come in from abroad, even with the green card process where we're seeing a lot of players get their green cards in a fairly quick amount of time, you know, the number of players coming in have taken up a lot of these international slots. There's only 6 free around the league right now. Now, that's not quite accurate in the sense that there are a lot of teams that have wiggle room to send a guy on loan for a full season in USL to open up slots. I think of Chicago right now, there's 3 of 4 rookies that they could easily send on loan for the year to go get minutes in Tulsa to open up 3 international slots. But you know, this is the new MLS. And I think as we see TAM continue to have an impact in this league, we're going to continue to see those international slots taken and the price for those slots to go up. And as I wrote in the column, it doesn't just have an impact on those slots, but on domestic players who are contributors in this league. It's a lot harder to trade within the league to get an American player or a player with a green card because it's so hard to find replacements that don't count against the international slots.
There it is. Better Call Paul, at Paul Tenorio on Twitter, apparently from the loading dock today, nationalwriter@MLSsoccer.com. Go check his work there as well as on social media. Paul, thanks for joining us, man.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on, guys.
One thing we didn't get to with Paul there, Toyota Park, yes? Toyota Stadium? Toyota Park? FC Dallas
Stadium.
And the Fire Stadiums will no longer be confused for eternity because the stadium at Bridgeview is now SeatGeek Stadium. So keep that in mind. When we say SeatGeek Stadium, yes, Toyota Stadium is in Dallas. Yes, it's always been a bugaboo of mine. I've been confused every single time. He mentioned the Lee Wynn situation, Diego Fagundes. You kind of popped up with some thoughts there. People can look out for a column from you, Bobby, on MLSsoccer.com soon. A lot of people have been putting around the stat line between Diego Fagundes since 2012 and Lee Wynn since the same time period and saying, hey, look, Diego's stats are very similar per 90. What do you make of this and the idea that Diego Fagundes could be the best number 10 at the club?
Yeah, you're right. If you break down, first of all, the team has done better this year, points per game, but that's fuzzy because they've had a couple games when they were upper men. The team overall has had more key passes, more expected goals, more big chances created, and also Diego Fagundes himself has had better numbers than Lee Wynn had the two previous years. There's definitely something there, but also I've said this in the article, I feel bad pointing that out because they do have the biggest difference of all, which is Brad Friedel and his playing style. Brad Friedel has asked them to press higher up the field to try and win the ball in the opposing half, and when you do that, either they get through you and they score, which has happened a fair amount to New England, or you win the ball and you've got a better chance of doing a through ball or creating a chance. So yes, Fagundes has been good and the numbers show that he deserves his spot, but I'm not willing to say that's totally reflective of Fagundes being better than Lee Wynn.
The thing is with Fagundes, and I think he's a great player, I'm happy to see him get kind of an unabridged run because he hasn't really ever gotten that in New England. Maybe 2013 when he had 13 goals and 7 assists, but that is far and away his best year from a productivity standpoint, and it is really a little bit of a different era in the
league. But isn't the numbers unfair because he doesn't get to play?
No, I agree with that as well.
So like,
but the flip side is if both these guys are really good, you couldn't find a way to get both on the field?
No,
of that pressing style because you say we only have room for
no,
one
but also,
number 10?
If you think Diego Fagundes' best position is number 10, he's a homegrown player that you want your team built around. Now you're saying, I don't think Lee Wynn can play out wide, and then you can't put both of them in there.
Right.
For example, Lee Wynn has been the number 10, and therefore Diego Fagundes had to play out wide for the last 3 years, and he hasn't always started. So if this is his best position, I'm not saying it is, because I don't know that it is, then that ends up being a situation where you say, okay, it probably started with the Lee Wynn contract stuff, but if Friedel genuinely thinks that Fagundes can be the number 10 of a winning MLS team, you're kind of in a place where, from a club perspective, that might be better.
I'm okay with that. I really am. I've wanted to see Diego Fagundes get more run for a long time, and if finally you make that decision and now's the time, great. But like I as a neutral, and this has nothing to do with like whether I think they're sending a message and that's the right one, whatever, I just, as a person who likes good soccer players, I want to see Lee Wynn play soccer. So it's just disappointing for him to watch and to be in the stands and to have Brad Friedel tell us that a guy who went for 10-10 last year and has done so before is not good enough.
I've never thought that Fagundes or Lee Wynn were cast properly to begin with. For the first 3 or 4 years of his career, I didn't think Fagundes was good at all. Takes too many touches on the ball, doesn't think his way through the game, didn't defend particularly hard, especially when it wasn't pressing. But now that Brad Friedel has given him a very clear role, saying, hey, go pressure when you get it, go straight at goal, Fagundes is very good at that. Do you think, I mean, really, if that is the specific job of that player, to press, to work hard defensively.
That doesn't sound like Lee Wynn.
Is that, I mean, that's the other part of this.
None of that sounds like Lee Wynn.
Which is fine. Move him on.
Right.
Get assets. Get assets so that you can go with that $750K in TAM and maybe improve your center backs.
But I agree with you, Bobby, in that if Friedel is changing the way they play that position, that doesn't sound. Now, you can have a number 10 in that situation where your team's pressing out that isn't the best at it and still, I think, be successful. But if Fagundes is going to do that, then why pretend anything else? And you've gone out and you've picked up a DP to put out on the wing in Pinilla.
He's good.
You have that spot filled. And then the rest of it, you've still got talent in Bunbury and Agudelo and everything else you've got.
Didn't mention Namath there.
Yeah, exactly. Another DP. So you have the wings kind of filled.
Let's keep it moving here and talk about Bobby Wood, because Steve Goff of the Washington Post reported that he was exploring the potential to move back, or not back, move to MLS. Not surprising. Bobby Wood likely to be relegated along with Hamburg. They've had a terrible season. This would be the first time in their history that they've flirted with it an awful lot. He has not scored since, I think it's August. He has one goal all season for Hamburg. He's not been starting since February or playing, really. Things are not going well for him right now in the Bundesliga at Hamburg. Maybe he would move back, but Goff reports that he would not want to take a pay cut, and he's reportedly making a couple million a year. He has more on his contract, many more years, so you would have to pay a transfer fee, one that would be expected to be in the seven figures. You know, obviously when this news comes out, we're looking around trying to point our fingers at a team that he could go play for, a team that should be interested in him. The Sounders have been mooted as a possibility. Sporting KC has been mooted as a possibility. Peter Vermees, along with that Fernando Torres comment, saying we would obviously look and are looking. Is Bobby Wood a player that an MLS team should go after? He's not on the allocation list, by the way, so you'd have to have a discovery claim on him. And if so, what is the price point that you think is a reasonable price point?
How do you make it on the allocation list? Who decides that?
Yeah, it was already pre-decided.
Yeah, either you get sold for a certain amount outside from the league to another place.
Like Matt Miazga.
Correct. Or you are kind of what they would consider a, at the time they made the list, a
desirable.
A1 national teamer. So I think right now on the list it's like Fabian Johnson is on there. Aaron Johansson is on there. Jeff Cameron was sold, so he's on there for
that
reason.
But he wasn't sold, I thought, for that certain number. But he was then.
Okay,
put
so
on
maybe
there.
He's on there for but the yeah. other. I don't know. Either way, he's on there. Christian Pulisic is on there. But Bobby Wood is not.
Where you don't want to go anywhere with this, Bobby?
Well, my first thought is that Aaron Johansson made it and Bobby Wood didn't.
Because three years ago, Aaron Johansson was starting in a World Cup and Bobby Wood wasn't really part of the national team.
Was that Urza Berger? Yeah. Remember that?
No, yeah. I don't have any deep thoughts on this. Bobby Wood's a good player. Is he a $2 million transfer fee plus a $1.5 million salary good in Major League Soccer? Probably not.
So let me ask you this question.
He's 25.
Let's talk about...
He doesn't have a goal-scoring record recently that's...
Right.
Much
where,
to talk
where
about.
Do you, what echelon of MLS player do you put him in with?
Also, can I just say that we love Bobby Wood on this show?
Yeah,
we do. I don't want anybody to think that any of this conversation doesn't reflect on the fact that we love Bobby Wood.
But talk to me, and obviously he's younger than I think a fair amount of these guys, but like Kai Kamara, Christian Coleman's a DP, obviously not scoring goals.
He's a young DP. He's a young DP.
Right. Carlos Vela just came into the league. Like
he's not in the Carlos Vela zone, that's for sure. He is not in the Christian Coleman zone because Coleman.
Is he in the Dom Dwyer zone?
He's had one good season of like A1 striker level productivity at the club.
You know what I don't like about these conversations is I'm not going to sit here and act like I watch a lot of Hamburg in the bottom of the Bundesliga. Even if you did, you wouldn't see him much. Yeah, so I still don't even know how good Bobby Wood is at soccer, except those handful of weird. And a lot of U.S. national team games are just weird against weird opponents on weird fields. So I just also don't know how good he is.
I think he's pretty good. I do not think that he is in that Carlos Vela level of, like, this is the attacking piece that our team is built around in Major League Soccer.
Do you think he can be your second best player for a good team?
How many Major League Soccer?
Second best attacking player?
Yeah.
Yeah, he could be. He could be. I mean, I think the thing with Bobby Wood, and we experienced this in our interviews previously with him, he's had so many downs, like painful downs within his career where it just felt like, God, this didn't work out, that maybe if you get him on a team where he is that second best attacking player, you've got somebody who's like a Ladero type who's just like playing him in behind and his job is to make that hard run at the near post and stretch a defense, maybe his confidence skyrockets and it's like, oh, wow, this is the Bobby Wood that we always wanted and imagined for the national team.
You would take Bobby Wood over Will Bruin?
Yes.
To start 100%.
For that team? Go. Yes.
For the Sounders? For sure. And I don't even think that's in a goal-scoring situation because I think you could argue
well,
that
younger.
Will Bruin would still score more goals, I would argue.
I don't
potentially,
think so at all.
Potentially, but I'm saying you have to stretch the field. If you're the Sounders, you don't have anybody who can do that. So it's more that he's filling a role that you don't otherwise have. But I'm like, man, you have – Jordan Morris is supposed to be that guy, right?
Yeah, well, he's not there this year.
Correct. But when he comes back, then what's up?
How many years left is Dempsey?
Yeah, that's true.
Wood or Yamil Assad?
Huh?
Wood or Yamil Assad? I'm just trying to range where Wood would be in Major League Soccer.
At what price point? Because if you
any price point,
Yamil Assad's in like that matters. Price point matters. But Yamil Assad's less than $1 million this year, so Yamil Assad.
I'm saying forget the price point, just in a general
Bobby
player.
Wood.
Okay.
Bobby Wood will score goals in Major League Soccer. Bobby Wood comes to this league, he's going to be easily a double-digit goal scorer. He's fast. He can stretch the field. He's pretty mobile, so he can come and help you in a couple different ways. I picture him similar to a Manotas. He's obviously older than Manotas, and I think he's a better finisher right now. What? You seem confused, Bobby.
This is a podcast, Bobby, so when you're confused, you have to say
things. I thought I was stretching by saying Will Bruin, and here you throw in Mauro Manotas.
Yeah.
I think Mauro Manotas is more of a similar player.
Bobby's not happy.
I don't know,
with this,
man.
I just don't know anything about Bobby Wood. I'm trying to talk about something.
I don't think an MLS team is going to sign Bobby Wood for a few million dollars per season.
Yeah, it's
salary,
way too much money.
And I don't think they're. I also don't think that they're going to spend that money on a transfer fee because of the economics behind it. Like, you go spend the money on a Jesus Medina because, or Ezequiel Barco even, because you're like, oh, we could sell this guy on. Bobby Wood coming at 25, you're not going to sell him on.
You could.
You could, but you're probably not going to.
Yeah.
And certainly not. You're going to.
You
not
could probably.
Make a big,
if
what's
he,
your margin?
If he
be?
Comes here and plays well, you can make your money back. I don't think you'd make money.
Right.
Feels like DC would be the most likely. This feels like a DC thing to do, doesn't it?
They're getting Mario Balotelli. They don't need him. Right. Right. Speaking of Barco, Ezequiel Barco, he came back for Atlanta United. How should Tata Martino use him? Saturday night's final game here, 10:30 p.m. Eastern, Week 8 is LA Galaxy Atlanta. How should he be used? Because Atlanta United are winning. It's almost, I'm not going to say they don't need Ezequiel Barco, but they haven't so far needed Ezequiel Barco to win.
Wasn't this the question the whole time?
Yeah, in part, yeah.
Like when they brought him in?
For sure.
No, when they brought him in, he was clearly going to play on the left of the 4-3-3. There was no question about that.
But now that they've moved and changed formations a little bit, and they got the five-man back line working, and Julian Gressel is the next
But in that scenario, Julian Gressel wasn't on the field.
Correct. That's because I didn't know that Julian Gressel was this good. And it also appears.
What do you mean? He was good last year.
Yeah, but they didn't know he was this good. They thought he was a good 12th or 13th man. We all thought that. Nobody thought that he was a top five outside back in the league.
Top five? Top three.
Top three outside back. That's fair.
I know. We're on that hype train right now.
Yeah,
but how would you use him then, Bobby? Like, does he get on the field then, or do you have a $15 million player hanging out watching?
It appears to me you have two options. You stick with the 3-5-2 and just assume that at some point there will always be a player who isn't fit or is just injured altogether, whether that's Villalba right now or Martinez at some point, or you want to rest somebody and you tell your team, you tell those Almiron, Martinez, Villalba, Nagby.
We're giving you a blow.
And you just acknowledge there's six spots, there's seven starters, and one of you will always get a blow.
Right, and look, we spent $15 million on this guy, so you can kind of like – from an organizational standpoint, it's not exactly a surprise that we might
Well,
ask.
It doesn't or, become he's – right? Then at that point, everyone's getting arrested. It's not like because of Barco, you're getting taken out of the line.
I don't know what he's been
pulling Villalba early some recently, which, you know, Villalba hasn't looked super happy about it. Justin Martinez looked extremely unhappy about not scoring a goal in the last game.
Or the other option to me is you go back to the 4-3-3 and you just make Julian Gressel your right back. You brought in Escobar in the offseason, so you bite the bullet on that one a little bit. I mean, maybe you create some kind of battle between Escobar and Garza. You can move Julian Gressel to left back. But there is no obvious answer. And I know you guys like to think, and everyone likes to think, that depth is really good. But to me, this is a really big problem that Tata has to solve, that some important player is going to be left out.
Is it beyond the idea to think you could pull Almiron a little deeper into the 3-5-2 and put Barco in as your second foe?
So you sit Villalba? Does Villalba seem a guy that's going to be?
Oh, well, yeah. If Villalba's healthy, yeah.
Then you're sitting Villalba, and especially Tata Martino, who has built a career on building deep relationships with players and gaining their trust. All of a sudden, he's got to take – and it's remember, Josef Martina is largely in MLS and not in Serie A because he is a hot trigger. What's the right word to use
hothead?
On a hothead? So, you know, these guys, you don't want to sit on the bench, and that can create a problem.
Zlatan probably not going to be sitting on the bench in this one either. He says on Jimmy Kimmel that he's going to the World Cup. Some of his Sweden teammates say that could disrupt the team, but this is Zlatan, so this is the way it works. ESPN Plus for this game, by the way, sign up if you're listening on Thursday. Sign up right now. Free 30-day trial. You can get this going without having to pay any money, so go get on that.
I would sign up right now.
Huh?
I would sign up tomorrow, so then you get 30 more days.
No, it's the offer is over today.
Oh. Just,
yeah. So
sign up today.
Yes.
I was trying to maximize my 30 days as close to the MLS weekend as you could.
I'm trying to explain to you that you will not get that free 30 days once it turns to Friday. So if you're listening on Thursday, please go download that just for your own sake. This game, LA Galaxy Atlanta at 10:30 p.m. Eastern on Saturday, is on ESPN+. Same for RSL Colorado at 9, FC Dallas Philly at 8, and Orlando San Jose at 7:30. There is a Friday game on 4:20, Sporting KC Vancouver. I went on KC Radio this week, guys, and said Sporting KC is the only team in the Western Conference that I feel any confidence about right now. Was that off? I felt like they are the only one that I would safely put in the top three at the end of the season.
I just want to say that you brought out the 4:20 reference and you didn't tee up a joke about it.
I assumed that most people would make their own.
Fair. Okay. Yeah, I'm with you. Sporting KC, you have to feel high on. The only question is...
So you made the joke.
I could have made a better joke. Gotcha. You're usually really good at teeing up those jokes.
Okay. Yeah, I missed on this one. My bad. I got to play my role. That's part of the team, Bobby. If that's my role within the team, I got to do it.
He's bird dogging right now.
I am bird dogging.
Or is he dog bergen?
I don't know.
You can't even say that because it's not a real thing. LAFC, maybe I'll put in there.
That's the one I put in there. They haven't played a home game yet. So they're already in the top of the West. They haven't played a home game. I understand they don't have depth, but as Bobby just explained to us, depth isn't always a good thing.
Right.
They also have Horta coming in, so they are adding to that. And we asked
Omar Gobert hasn't even played yet.
We asked the question about Patrick Vieira, and we talked about Patrick Vieira. No, that was in the mailbag.
The thing about LAFC.
We will. Don't worry. We'll get to Patrick Vieira.
The thing about LAFC is... Who on SKC goes down and you're like, oh, crap, they're screwed? If LAFC loses Carlos Vela, that's a different organization.
But that's also what you might say is a weak point with Sporting KC, that they don't have a A1 difference maker,
also,
so to speak.
And if also, they lose Johnny Russell.
Don't forget about Quasi.
Johnny Russell is that guy, yeah.
If they lose Johnny Russell, they might be in trouble.
Yeah, dude's good.
Well, they lost Felipe and they haven't been.
No, but Johnny Russell's the one guy who beats defenders, who takes people out of play. Everyone else, maybe Shallowy. Moves the ball quickly, plays their role, pushes. Like, no one has that element of I can change the game on my own except Johnny Russell.
You guys know what I learned the other day that I didn't fully know?
What?
You guys know Sporting Kansas City had the most passes attempted in 2017?
I did not know that.
It's an interesting way to conceptualize the way we think of Sporting
Kansas
City.
What about passing is completed?
Also the highest, I believe. NYCFC and Toronto are also up there, but I'm pretty sure that KC actually had the highest completed.
Yeah, that's a shift for them. Like, when Ilya came, they went to more of, like, a possession-based system than they had been before. Previously, it had been like, we're going to get up on you, the Kai Kamaras and the
But
CJ
also,
Kapongs
doesn't that reflect
run it down you.
The way teams have reacted to that, which is we're going to sit back
yeah,
and eat us.
There's an element of that.
Because we're not going to play
like,
with
have
it.
The ball.
Yeah,
here you
exactly.
go. Here's the ball.
And that's
Beat
been
us.
Their biggest issue is right. they can't score, which is sort of what we talked about with Red Bulls at the same time. In the playoffs, you sit back and you don't have the ball, and then they have to try and beat you.
Friday Night Soccer, Sporting KC Vancouver, 9 p.m. Eastern, TSN, and also on ESPN+. Your Soccer Saturday starts at 1 p.m., Montreal and LAFC. That's TVA Sports up in Canada, ESPN+ here. Houston, Toronto at 3. Toronto, I can't imagine they'll go straight back to their TFC2 team. We could be looking at a situation here that Toronto FC, through five games, through basically a month, 2 months of the season, are the worst team on points in Major League Soccer, which would be extremely interesting. But that's the way the CCL campaign has gone for them. Anything else you're looking at from this weekend, guys? Anything that you are hoping to see? Red Bull Chicago?
No, there's
Columbus,
Rocky Mountain Cup.
Yeah, for sure.
That's going to get you excited.
Yeah.
It doesn't?
I don't know. RSL,
on RSL.
If you go,
okay.
Yeah, I know. If you go back and listen to those shows at the end of last season, we were RSL
But
homer.
Colorado were 4 unbeaten. Now, I know it was like a TFC2 squad last week, but they're starting to find their feet to
Jack,
some extent.
Jack Price in my life.
Yeah. Some of the signings Anthony Hudson have made have hit. I don't still know that they're getting enough production from those wingbacks in terms of like getting forward and changing the game, but you saw Dylan Serna get some burn last week, and if that's a spot that he fits into, like that's an OG homegrown hype train
that
player
is,
that we haven't talked
sure.
about in
like,
3 years.
With the big
years.
Injuries, with the golazo yeah. that like, got you jacked up. Bobby, you do something interesting before we get out of here and go to the mailbag. Sorry, I didn't know if you were like texting over there or what you were up to. where you're like, oh, this is the game we'll learn the most about. This is the game that we'll Do you have anything in there? You have any thoughts? I mean, I think this week's an interesting one because like
I've got
Columbus
one.
Gets a home game against New England, and they were good, and then they weren't getting results, and they're like, who are they? What are they?
I think that's a good one. The other one is Portland home to NYCFC. Can Portland beat a good team at home? Like, they didn't play that well against Minnesota. So that win at home, and they didn't hang on to it well either. That win at home doesn't look that good. If they beat NYCFC at home now, this week, that changes things.
Houston's got to be happy about this Toronto FC 2 team rolling into town.
Well, that's why they wouldn't let them reschedule.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, no, we'll just take the points, assuming.
Although I'm sure if you asked Tom Kinnear in 2009 or 2010 when he was in CONCACAF Cup, he would have a different answer.
We're fine with Houston doing that, right? Because they know regardless Toronto isn't going to bring a first team. It's not like they're jeopardizing Toronto's run in Champions League. Good for Houston.
Yeah, Houston's got to do what's right for them.
Bobby, MLS for TFC. Where are you?
I'm fine with them cheering for TFC, but what Houston did here, all they would do is give Toronto an advantage in Major League Soccer, not in CCL.
Right.
Are they a good game? I'm really into Dallas-Philadelphia. Both these teams have looked really good at times, really bad at times. I would like to
when
see them.
When did Philly look good?
So this is Bobby's thing. And I was about to say, Bobby still finds promise in Philadelphia's losses.
I still really like – they have the highest expected goals minus expected goals conceded. They have the biggest difference.
Really?
Yeah. So they have played – I still think they play good soccer and they look good. It's just if for whatever reason, CJ Sapong and David Akam have been really bad. And you can play all the good soccer you want, but if your two top attackers aren't playing well, you're not going to score, which is what's happening right now.
Okay. We'll see what happens. I'll be watching that game. MLS Matchday Central going down. By the way, Dave and I, not this weekend, but next, we will be at the opening of Banc of California Stadium. Extra Time Live, facebook.com/ExtraTimeLive. Go like it, go follow. That's how you watch this show. We're going to have an hour-long just exploratory process of us just kind of skipping around, having a good time, bringing you to a game that unless you're one of, what, like 20-some, 23? 3,000-4,000 people you won't get to be at. We'll be there. What are you looking forward to?
Well, I would like to say we'll be there for the weekend. So if anyone has good pickup on Saturday.
Oh, good call. Yeah.
Because California still will be sunny for the first time in my life in
right.
4 months. So I'll be down to play outside. What am I most looking forward
to? Because we see, you know, it's not renderings are over.
Yeah.
And it's incredible that the actual stadium really looks like the renderings because oftentimes that's not the case.
The renderings look like a spaceship and
correct.
The stadium looks like a stadium.
Yeah. But it's very, very close this time. It looks beautiful. It looks incredible.
So quite honestly, the thing I'm most excited about is seeing LAFC in person for the first time because I've not seen them play in person and I've seen most MLS teams play in person. And it'll be fun to watch Bob Relly's team out there and in a game that matters and whatnot.
I'm also in for we've seen their culture through like events, through the super draft, through all these kind of like build up moments, but there truly is nothing like your own home,
right.
Your stadium, your opportunity to say like this is who we are as a club, as a fan base, as an entity, and this is what you feel when you come into our stadium.
Yeah.
To feel that for the first time and have the honor of being there and being one of the people that will get that kind of like ingrained memory, that's what I'm looking forward to.
I would like to know LAFC fans out there that are going to go to games this year. Did you buy a black LAFC jersey? Because it's going to get hot in California
not
in a black jersey.
Hot, right? Not that hot. It's pretty temperate.
I don't know.
Right.
I've baked at Galaxy games, but I've also baked.
You're a sweater.
In the winter in New York City.
You're a sweater. Yeah. You're a sweater. All right. Facebook.com/ExtraTimeLive. Go follow. Go like the page. We'll be there next week and hit us up if you have pickup or taco trucks or whatever. Something fun that we could do. We're going to go to break. On the other side, the mailbag. See you then.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental, into the mailbag. As always, you know how to get at us. 401-206-0MLS. Call or text. Of course, you can hit us up via the email, extratime@mlssoccer.com or on mlssoccer.com/mailbag. All apply. Marlon Argueta hit us up here, legend in D.C. area here. He says, for Bobby Warshaw, I love that he is repping the DC United Parley jersey, but he has the only one left. MLS is sold out. I work for a nonprofit that protects watersheds, so what do I have to do to get that jersey from Bobby? He did the contest, he says, by the way, as well. The contest is, share photos, videos, what have you, of your green initiatives on Twitter. Use the hashtag GreenerGoals and hashtag sweepstakes in the tweet, and you could win one of these Parley jerseys, which, by the way, are flying. Atlanta United fans were furious because it happened in 3 minutes and they were gone. I've got a Sporting KC one that I'm holding on to right now. They're sweet. They're awesome. They're really cool. I thought they were lame at first because I was like, oh, white and kind of like gunmetal. But then I got it in my hands and I put it on, and I felt good.
Do we have a name and email for that person?
Marlon Argueta. Yeah, I mean, he hit us up. We can email him right back.
Yeah, you got that jersey. It'll come your way. We'll email you. We'll get an address to send it to.
Man.
It's all yours.
Working look at that.
Maybe probably still owes him an ETR shirt from like 3
years
ago.
Yeah, we'll throw an ETR shirt.
Or maybe something else.
Yeah, we'll throw an ETR
so
shirt. I've got a running list
else.
Of the ETR shirts
in
a Google doc that I don't think I've even opened up the box of the new crop of shirts that we have. Dad life. That's my excuse for everything.
For sure.
Yep. So that's the way it goes. You want to take us through some of these CCL reacts?
Yeah. Dave? So I got on the computer today and looked at all 18 forms of mailbags that we have. And there was one consistent thread, which was mention of the free space. Nathan in Trent, or sorry, Perry in Portland, free space, and then a couple sad emojis.
I've thought about should we make
free space shirts,
but then it hurts too much.
Well, let's find
it's
out
just
what
happens.
Let's see what happens in a week. Might
yeah,
be more
kind
fun.
Of be, kind of be a little ironic if
it's in the past.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nathan and Trenton, the free space is bitter, acrid, enervating.
Enervating.
Disappointment.
Yeah.
I've never even used that word in my life.
That gets on your nerves. It's like
Kevin Chan, why does this sport suck so bad? Why do I keep doing this to myself every year? And how do I make my heart stop bleeding? Freaking Chivas. That was in all caps.
Correct. Even his name, even the entry of his name into the MLSsoccer.com/mailbag was all caps.
Then we got into the fun part, which was the Josie and Michael choke again, which I want it to be known that I am putting every one of these out there because I know how much it pisses off Michael and Josie and how well they have played every time someone has questioned
yeah,
them.
Yeah, that's true.
So I am
they
in
get
belief.
Booed, they go win MLS Cup.
Yeah, we're doing our small part here to help TFC get over the edge. We've got CM in true Altidore Bradley fashion. Toronto has blown it again. I hope they get booed at every away stadium and miss the playoffs. I will not be watching any USMNT games. They are called in for Vamos MLS, Taylor and Ithaca. Josie and Bradley's legacy now comes down to a simple question. Can they get it done on a cold, rainy night in a game they should win?
I don't think it'll be rainy or cold probably in Guadalajara, so, you know.
So that's your
reaction
to that.
I don't have a chance to reverse that cold, rainy side, but look, I mean, it's not on Josie and Bradley as individuals, but they are the leaders of this team once again. I mean, I don't know. Is it on? I mean, it will definitely be on their legacies if they don't win this.
And if they do and they play
and
a hand in it, it will be the crowning achievement.
Certainly
of
the
their
crowning
legacy.
Achievement of their MLS legacy, no doubt. But I would argue both of their club legacies as well, just in a general sense.
To be down 2-1 and go on the road and win something no one's ever won before?
Yeah. This would be the biggest moment of their club careers.
This is one of these big picture conversations that I struggle with. Like, what role do star players have in winning championships? How much do championships matter? Legacy, legacy, legacy.
It's all about rings.
Just makes my head explode every time we do this.
Why? I mean, how is that? Like,
because it's a team sport. Because, no, to Bobby's point,
it's a small sample
size. I mean, you talk about MJ and LeBron. LeBron has played 3 times more games than MJ already, and he's probably going to play 4 more years. But it comes down to 6-7 game series that MJ's legacy is built up, right? And so that's the Bobby's point. Bradley and Josie are what they are over the course of 40 games
and
or 45 games.
Which is great players.
So judging them on one game and even them playing well but not well enough or them playing well but not inspiring everyone else in a team sport is tough.
Is there such a thing as stepping up in the big moment? Is that really something that people
do?
No,
Bobby, I agree with you on that. But there is such a thing as winning in the big moment, and that's what people remember. Like, this isn't necessarily about, like, oh, hey, Michael Bradley, you're less of a player from a technical, you know, intelligence standpoint, tactically. No, that's not what it's about. It's strictly how do we remember people? And the way that you remember people in sports is whether or not they won. And if it's not winning, it's entertainment, it's personality, it's a lot of different things. But ultimately, it all comes back to one thing, which is whether you've won. Charles Barkley's a great player. There's a reason why he gets his you know, he gets it just thrown at him every single time on TNT because he hasn't won a title, and he has to sit there and say, "I get it, I'm, you know, guys,
but he's a better
I can't measure
than
up."
Kenny the Jet, who
100% he is,
to.
No doubt he is. But like ultimately, in team sports, in individual sports, in sports, we measure it on winning. So you just, if you don't win, that becomes an overriding narrative to your career. And I know you struggle with narratives, but that's what's at stake.
It's a totally fair point. My only question is Kenny the Jet taking over the Knicks?
No. He's not even one of the guys interviewing.
Oh, I thought he was.
No, that's other guys.
Other guy.
Yeah, exactly. And then we ended up getting, you know, more Josie, stuff like that. Did not think it possible, but TFC choked. This is what happens when League MX teams study the opposition. Careful what you wish for. I don't know that that's what happened. Pretty sure Chivas went out and played the exact same way they've played in this tournament, as well as in League MX for the last year, and TFC just didn't get it done.
Yeah.
Toronto is perfectly capable of pulling off a 2-0 or 2-1 win in the next leg. They've already gotten big results in Mexico twice now. It's less than ideal to lose 2-1, of course, but there's absolutely no reason to get super worried about it.
By the way, this guy's name is Clay. Clay La Soul. Cirque de Soclay. I mean, I applaud his puns in using his own name on Twitter. That's good stuff. But look, there is reason to be not super worried, but there's reason to have that just kind of like pit of dread.
They are no longer the favorites.
Oh, 100% not.
Right? They are going in this game, and they need to do something to disrupt the status quo to win this game. Or win this series, sorry, not win the game.
Right.
So that changed over the last 90 minutes, but that doesn't mean that they're out.
But look, we may end up – like, we may – you know, I listened to Monday's episode. I may end up going back and listening to this episode after they win and being like, boy, we were so doom and gloom. We're so reactive.
I feel like I'm not that doom and gloom.
I'm not doom and gloom at all.
Yeah, but I'm just saying in reflection.
You are doom and gloom.
Only doom and gloom.
When you mean I.
I know. I wrote my column like I listened to like some indie classics.
I saw you listen to Sum 41.
Yeah,
that was awesome.
In a cafe and was just like, I'm so angsty right now. Why? Yeah. Why?
Man. You ready for other MLS?
Yeah, let's go.
The Toronto Duck, who I'm sure is not in a good mood. What has Patrick Vieira done to grow NYCFC so consistently?
Well, I think you have to throw Claudio Reyna in there as well because obviously squad building is a huge part of what they've done. I think that they figured out through trial and error, like a little bit of success, certainly some error as well in personnel decisions, what kind of player was going to work in MLS. And Patrick Vieira had a very clear concept with the way he wanted to play, and he communicated that to his players, and he gave them the confidence to execute it. And he had to do that, especially given they play half their games at Yankee Stadium, and that a bandbox, it turns it into something unrecognizable at times, and you got to be mentally strong and mentally committed to what you're doing to play through that.
It's all about clarity. He is very clear about what he wants, and when you're clear, it's easier to grow, it's easier to identify weaknesses, mistakes, it's easier to identify talent to fit into that system. Patrick Vieira is very clear and honest about what he expects from his players at all times, and that allows for measurable growth.
I like your point about the recruitment side, and we've seen that a little bit with like Crew SC as well. But I think you also have to look at this team. They can tap into Manchester City's network as well. So when you look at this offseason, you're like, you know, we didn't know who Jesus Medina was really, but he's hitting. We didn't know Ismael Tejeri-Shradi. Well, he's hitting. They have a center back they signed that isn't playing now because he's not better than the two guys in there. But maybe when one of those guys moves on, we realize, oh, he's hitting as well. Like so many of their signings. Tinnerholm, Berget. Like so many of these signings have worked. Herrera, which is kind of a no duh situation, but Alexander Ring, I think you could, Maxi Morales, you could throw in a lot of these buckets. Like, their signings have worked.
And your point is that we're at DC United sends Dave Casper, Ben Olsen, and one scout down to watch a game. NYCFC has 50 people throughout the whole city
you just
sports
have a,
group.
Yeah, you just have a bigger net. And I don't even think it's necessarily about – there is expertise, obviously, but you just have a bigger net. You can look at more players closely, and then you can evaluate them and just make better decisions.
That's a really good point.
Your admirable out of Seattle. How is it possible Stefan Fry has only been called into USMNT camp once? I know I'm being a bit of a homer, but did you see him against SKC? He's been one of the few bright spots in Seattle and is consistently putting on weekly clinics as a goalkeeper. Not to get out in front of this too much, but since 2018's gone and lost, when qualifying comes around in 2020, are we going to see him put on a national team jersey? He'll only be 33 should we bore the hype chain now. So he'd be 33 to start qualifying. In 2020, he would be 35 to try and make it to the next World Cup. I want to ask Stefan Fry specifically, but also that age range. For 31-year-old guy, 30-year-old right now, you making an attempt in the U.S. national team coaching staff to pull them into your pool?
Yeah, absolutely. If he's only going to be 34, 35, that's when a goalkeeper often peaks. So, yeah, that's definitely within the age range of somebody you call in.
I think goalkeeper is a different position and with different requirements, both like in longevity, but also just what you want on a given day. Like, you know, it's a young man's game at outside back, probably. It's a young man's game at, you know, your winger positions or your outside midfield, like even central midfield in a lot of cases. But, like, to me, at goalkeeper, every game you pick the guy that gives you the best chance to win.
So would Stefan Fry be one of those guys for you?
He would be one of those guys. I'm not with our admiral out of Seattle here that he would be, like, so clearly far and away number one. He would be certainly in the conversation and in the pool. But I think right now the pool is in such disarray that it's hard to really understand. And there's such a pressure right now to look at young players because the stakes are so low. But once you get into, like, Copa America in the next, like, year and a half, once you get into the World Cup qualifying, that's when it becomes who has promise, who could be the next, but who is the best goalkeeper in our pool, who gives us the best chance to win. And if Stefan Fry is that guy, you go with him.
One of the things about Stefan Fry is he is in this weird age range where he's kind of too close to Tim Howard and Brad Guzan. We did not expect Tim Howard to fall off the cliff this badly with his performance. We all thought there was another year or two when he was done, Brad Guzan would step in and still stay at a high level. And Stefan Fry was just in this weird age range where we thought that he was going to peak when Tim Howard and Brad Guzan were still options. So it was the 38-year-old, the 34-year-old, I don't know how exact Guzan is, and then the 22, 23 to groom them.
Right. But it was Raimondo in large part through that because they were saying, you know what, our number three goalkeeper is, it needs to be cool with that. He's like, okay, I'm the number three. I'm along for the ride. I'm a locker room guy. Also, Nick Raimondo, like, grew up with all these dudes. So you're talking about, like, a locker room chemistry situation where it just worked. And if he's not going to play, maybe you prioritize that. I mean, you're right, though. Timing hurts.
Right. It's not a reflection of Fry's ability to say he's not the third or fourth best goalie in the pool. It's just his age in reference
to
the other goalies.
There is a piece of it that's a reflection on how the U.S. national team has been managed over the last 6 years.
Nobody.
You got
to
give guys
team.
Chances. He went to MLS Cup. He clearly was playing at a high level. You give him a chance in a camp at some point.
Nobody in that team thought that Tim Howard or Brad Guzan weren't
so,
very
so
good
in
options.
Fairness,
that caught everyone by surprise.
I actually thought Tim Howard was going to fall off earlier because he's such an athletic goalkeeper. And you say goalkeepers peak at 33 or 34. I didn't think Tim Howard was going to be that player. But I was surprised at how hard Brad Guzan fell off, which was the big issue, I think. Brad Guzan should have been ready to take it from Howard.
Well, he should have had the job earlier. He should have been given
the
job.
But he fell
after
off in his club. So what does it matter if he's given the job or not? He fell off playing club soccer, which was the problem, which was what hurt the
U.S. goalkeeper
team. Okay,
situation.
Let's get out of the U.S. national team. As an FC Dallas fan, I still won't buy stock in this team because the players that produced in early 2017, Urruti, Grueso, Acosta, and Barrios, haven't shown that quality yet. Are y'all going to buy stock for FC Dallas making the playoffs?
That's Ismael Belcuro, just to shout him out in Dallas.
And I think that's an interesting angle to take because you would assume they're winning and those guys aren't good.
Well.
They're undefeated.
They've won and they're undefeated.
Yeah.
They're not winning in the same sense that like Atlanta United was or New York City FC are, where it's like we've got four or five.
It's a different sport for every team. Doing what you do, they have – the result, I don't really have much for you. I don't really believe a lot in FC Dallas right now.
Okay, so there you just answered the question.
Yeah.
You're not buying stock in them making the playoffs.
No, I am in them making the playoffs.
Because
it's
the West.
Yeah, not as them as an MLS Cup contender.
I mean, if I'm buying stock in West teams to make the playoffs, I'm buying stock in every single team in the West and just like, you know, I'm hedging all my bets.
But in FC Dallas, showing an ability to win in small margins is what they're going to need to do at some point this year, because I don't think they're head and shoulders above that many teams. So this style of winning that they're going through right now, and it might be lucky, it might not, is what they're going to do all year. I think they're going to make the playoffs.
My finger's on the button to buy, because I really like Christian Coleman. He's missed a lot of chances. He's
been
the butt of a lot of jokes. But when you watch him through the run of play, he's a good soccer player. Mosquera has looked really good at times. I have no idea how Mikey Barrios and Maxi Verdi have gotten as much leniency as they have. At some point in life, I want to be as lucky with my opportunities as they've been.
Lama and Ja'Cory Hayes have looked good this year as well.
Ja'Cory Hayes has looked amazing. Lama has looked so good at times.
Yeah,
you're exactly
so
right.
Now what happens when Kellen comes back? How does that midfield work?
The big thing is they just need to figure out who they are. Enough trying to be a passing team. Enough trying to play beautiful. Work hard. Be efficient on the counter. Define who you are at first before you figure out.
Does that include if you're that team, where you work hard and you're efficient on the counter, does that include Mauro Diaz? He was not in the starting lineup last week.
Largely because it was away at New England and they wanted to counter and bypass the New England press. It was when they were really good, right? It was that style plus Mauro Diaz underneath the striker to just do that last pass. I mean, to me, you can defend and counter with 8 or 9 guys and have that luxury.
And you let Mauro be just a floater.
I mean, they did it for a year and a half when they were the best team in the league over that span.
Let him be like a David Ferreira-esque player.
You can go down a long list of guys that have played that role in MLS.
Bearded Jack in New Jersey, I've enjoyed quite a few Matt Doyle sound bites, but Flipper was basically James Bond of the sea. Might just top the list.
Yeah, that was a good one. I really enjoyed that conversation. Bobby, what sort of animal are you just terrified of?
Snakes.
Snakes.
Yeah. I think that's an okay one.
Do you have any snake stories?
Like
go
huge
along
ones, small ones, rattlesnakes,
all snakes,
anything?
Garter snakes.
When I was just in Tasmania, where there's, it's part of Australia, there's
Tassie?
Snakes everywhere. Tassie, as the locals say. I was on a trail and I was walking and I had a snake pass in front of me and a snake pass behind me, and it was like 7:30 in the morning and thought I was going to die. I picked out my phone out of my pocket and I tried to call my parents from this path in Tasmania at 7 in the morning because I was like, I'm going to die. Wait, alone at 7 a.m. in the middle of this.
The worst part of this story for me, and I don't like snakes either, but sharks still are going to top my list, is that the passing by, it's just like envisioning you walking and like two snakes slithering.
It was the
like
worst.
The slither is the scary part. Like, that shouldn't be able to move like that.
Tasmania is also definitely one of those places where you're like, everything can kill you. Everything will kill you.
So I was already on high intent.
Yeah. There you go.
I'm still on sharks. We had an unnamed texter in parts unknown hit us up. He says he 100% agrees with being terrified of sharks in the ocean. His story, he was in Hawaii once. A couple of his Navy buddies, they took him out swimming to a coral reef. The water went from 20 feet deep to a sheer drop-off that was probably 80 feet or so. There were fish around me that looked like they were half my size. I started having a panic attack and immediately swam for shore.
Yep.
Yeah. It's that unclaimed space that I can't do anything with. That I'm also very scared of.
What's unclaimed to me?
Yeah, what does that mean?
I don't know what's in it, I think is really what it is. So, like, I'm saying that there's all this space, and I can't go to any of it, and I can't, like, if I was like, I gotta get away, I can't do it. Whereas a shark is just like, that's my space. I claim it. I got you. I'm eating you. That's my shark voice. So, all right, big weekend coming up. All the coverage, MLSsoccer.com. Bobby, myself, Matt Doyle, Susanna Collins, Kaylin Carr in the studio all weekend for MLS Match Day Live. Tune in for that. Another reminder, just to get it out there again, April 29th at Bank of California Stadium. Dave and myself will just be running amok as LAFC open up their new digs. 8 p.m. Eastern is the start time on that. The game starts at 9, so we'll bring you all the way up. We'll be everywhere. Go follow us on Facebook to make sure you catch that. Facebook.com/ExtraTimeLive. If you're going to be there, again, we'd love to grab a beer with you. We'll also be at the Galaxy match on Saturday. So holler at us. With that, we'll see you next time.